Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, we're all over the map, and I'm glad we are. I wanted to talk about the economy, because what if they've raised the interest rates three different times already? And each time with 0.75%, which really in any normal time would be a large bump all at once, right? I mean, you would see them raising it 0.25 percentage point, but now they did it three different times at 0.75%. And so things still kind of, well, you don't sense it.
Well, economists, I think, watching this, you know, it's always easy to be Monday morning quarterbacks, say, you know, they let inflation go too long. They kept coming up with excuses for the inflation. Well, it's a shortage here, but it's temporary. That's what it's caused by. Or it's COVID, and as soon as COVID gets behind us, it won't be there anymore. And instead of it going away, it got stronger. And, of course, there is this inflationary psychology, and that's really at the basis of psychology. People begin to decide it's going to be more expensive tomorrow, I'll buy it today. And it's that decision is particularly supported if wages are going up somewhat at the same time. And, of course, that is what's happening now. We have shortage of labor. We've got shortages generally. Inflation has a real hold. You go back to the prior experience on it during the late 70s and before Jimmy Carter, but then Jimmy Carter is elected, and the Federal Reserve had a very incremental approach like it does now. They were just upping it a little bit, and nope, still got inflation. Upping it a little bit, nope, still got inflation. I think inflation was up at 8 or 9, 10%. And got up to maybe 11%. And then Paul Volcker watches this and said, well, you know, you can't do this incrementally. You got to hit inflation over the head. You know, we've got the cancer of inflation. We're going to give it some chemotherapy. And so he drove interest rates up by percentage points, multiple percentage points at one swell foop kind of a thing. And, you know, it got all the way up to 20%. And interest rates, prevailing interest rates, mortgage rates got up to 13-14%. It was painful.
It shut everything down.
Well, it caused a real recession, caused Jimmy Carter to lose an election. But it killed inflation, hit it over the head. It hasn't reared its ugly head again until now. And now we have the Fed again using this incremental approach, thinking that 0.75 point would be a sufficient announcement to the world, the public, that inflation was going to be put under control, and so far, not clear. Okay, the jury's out. There's still a hope, but the jury's out on this thing. And so now there's really a hope, maybe, that through both better fiscal management, but also through some economic management of the economy, if we could stop shortages, if we could try and get the economy moving in a direction that it could respond to the shortages more effectively and take materials out of short supply, maybe that could help. But there continue to be shortages around the horn, and the worry is that some of the things that look like creating worry for us is excess inventory. So, you know, we've got I think Kohl's has reported poor performance based on, to some extent, on excess inventories. Some of the other retailers have found out that excess retail can be a real problem.
But Sandy,
and so if they start scaling back inventory, now we got the stuff recession is made out of.
But Sandy, here's what I don't understand. A year ago, the supply chain problem, they were concerned about whether or not there's going to be enough, you know, inventory for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And we understood why, because, you know, the bottleneck and all those things. Hasn't that eased up, being able to get the supplies back in, or is it the problem now with the production
things? The problem is actually more specific than that. Most of the people who've had inventory problems bulked up on the inventory of the stuff that people were buying during the pandemic. People were buying lots of things for their homes, home furnishings.
They had extra money.
Home furnishings.
Right.
They were buying things at the hardware store. They were buying landscaping things. Those people bulked up on the inventory because they wanted to have enough the next year to make all that money, right? And now with the post-pandemic, the appetite for all those things has shifted to other things. So what we have now is inventory problems that are quite specific to changes in retail appetite as much as anything. But the lesson learned there is that you get your inventory too high, just like always. That was a lesson everyone knows in retail. Too much inventory, big problem. And so now we've got people worried that there is a recession looming. Even though we've got shortage, what are we going to do about that? And maybe we shouldn't order too much stuff.
Well, you know, Sandy, during that time, as you and I and many other people well know, that was at the time that the government was giving people $1,200 checks and,
right,
and people who normally, and that allowed them to purchase things that they wouldn't have been able to purchase. That money was flowing.
Right.
And so maybe they got a little greedy, huh?
Well, yeah, it's not greediness. It's just the marketplace trying to make decisions. I mean, you know, you base your inventory on what you did last year and what you think you're going to do next year.
Yeah, but don't you look at the fact that this government money was coming in?
Well, but it's not easy if you just run a store to figure out exactly why. So you're basically reacting based on the data you understand and know, and nobody knows the broad marketplace. And, in fact, I don't think anybody was good at guessing exactly how these appetites would change as the result of the pandemic, and nobody really knows how the appetites are going to change as the pandemic fades. You know, people are still getting it, right?
Right.
Lots of people. And appetites in the marketplace are changing. Appetites for work are changing. Economists still can't get their arms around what's happening in the workplace and why there seem to be shortages in almost every area for workers.
Hey, Bob, thank you very much for hanging in there. Thank you for the call. You say what, sir?
Well, good morning, first off. Just want to point out a couple of details. The CEO average wage income is 670 times the average worker wage. I liked the way Richard Nixon handled inflation. And that was to challenge companies and labor to not increase their prices on goods or their prices on labor, and that helped reduce the helped eliminate inflation at that point. And I look at the way we're approaching giving money to the poor is investing in American people. That there's a very important element in the strength of our nation, and they need to be reinvested in. So the money that we take from the wealthy is not just being taken from them, it's being reinvested in our country, and it'll eventually work its way up through the economy. I'm going to get off the phone and listen to you. Thank you much.
Hey, Bob, thank you very much for the call. Thank you for listening. Sandy, you want to respond to anything Bob had to say?
Well, Nixon, I mean, he also implemented some price controls, actual government controls.
Mean regulation?
Yeah, regulation. And so Nixon hadn't yet abandoned the notion that government was a tool that needed to be used for the purpose of helping the American economy operate in its best possible way. there is some merit to the notion that that there is a bully pulpit that could do something, particularly about prices. I'm a little reluctant, and I'm sort of sorry to see that as soon as inflation rears its ugly head, we start wanting to clamp down on wages. Tom, Dick, and Mary have had their wages increasing well below the CPI for a substantial number of years now, and here we are probably just playing catch-up during this period of shortage where the wages are moving up at a clip. Not many of them moving up at the clip of the current inflation level, 8 or 10%, and now we're starting to talk about putting a lid on wages when wages are probably just beginning to creep forward to catch up with their lagging behind the CPI for a substantial number of years. The American business model has sort of been premised on increasing production levels out of workers without increasing their wages and increasing profitability thereby, and so I'm reluctant to propose that American policy had put a lot of restrictions on wage increases, but I think we ought to find a way to solve for shortages, and I think we ought to try and persuade people that the Federal Reserve will take the steps necessary to cure inflation, because what we need to get rid of is inflation psychology.
So the Federal Reserve is going to continue to raise rates. Do you foresee them raising them to a point at a time as opposed to what they've been doing with three quarters? There is some movement or impact with what they've done, but it's moving at a very slow pace.
Well, I for one think that it would be better for them to pull the sword out rather than simply rattle it.
But just raise it 2 points.
Raise it 2 points and say, look, this is going to stop, and we're going to do two now, and if it doesn't slow down, we're going to do more, and that would help erase the psychology. People would begin to believe it. The stock market is currently not believing what their policy
right.
is because the stock market keeps believing, based on the inversion of the yield curve as well as the way the stock market behaves, that interest rates are going to go down pretty soon. They're going to go
then
up
the stock market hasn't suffered as much.
And that's all related to the vision of long-term interest rates returning to a low norm. And so that means they aren't really believing that that inflation's going to continue, which means that they're probably overestimating the capacity of the current rate increases to throttle inflation.
But Sandy, those people who are, you know, making these pronouncements on what they think is going to be, the interest rates are going to be, and so with their investments, they got to know that we're still kind of out there on the limb and we're in no man's land. We know something's going to be changing quickly.
Well, there's a strong upward bias in Wall Street. Everyone, all these guys who manage other people's money want to make sure they don't miss any of the upward movement in the market because they all get graded by their returns relative to the.
But it doesn't always go up.
Well, it doesn't always go up, but there's a bias in their view that they are
hoping it's worth the risk.
That they're hoping it goes up, and it's important to them that it goes up, and basically, Wall Street is, if they were, they don't play small ball, okay? If they had a baseball team, they would have 9 home run hitters sitting on the bench who all get paid for hitting the long ball. And because in Wall Street, you get penalized some for missing the mark going up, but you always get penalized for missing the mark that you could have made going up. So there's a strong bias to believe it's going to go up. And so I believe that Wall Street and the stock market tends to be forecasting what they hope for more than what they actually will happen.
So how far out ahead can they get on projections? I mean, before you know it, the holidays are going to be here. And do they go out that far ahead?
Oh, man, the stock market is really premised on long-term views of ahead. And my concern about the stock market has always been they put far too much weight on the near-term result when it's really what's going to happen in years 2 through 12 out in the future that would dictate what the value of a stock is.
All right, so we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. So, I mean,
I'm so sorry. What did I do?